The guest who is joining us is someone who we've enjoyed speaking with in the past. He is a noted psychotherapist and author. Jonathan Berendt is joining us on our program. We've had very lively discussions with Jonathan before on this program. We've talked a number of times about the topic of social anxiety as well. Jonathan, first of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you join us again. There's many areas where we can go in our discussion, but let's talk at the beginning of this discussion about something that, as you know, happened literally just days ago here in Manhattan. Specifically, this shooting that took place at outside the Empire State Building. And some people's reaction to shootings like this one, to the shooting that took place in Aurora, Colorado, is that people wonder exactly what is going on. Some people will react and start talking about the number of guns that there are and the propensity for violence that that might lead to. I don't want to go that route in our discussion, but you take a little different view with this. Help us, if you can, to try to better understand what it is we're seeing.
Well, tragically, there are subsets of these killings today. Now, what are the commonality that these killers have in common? And I put some of them, basically, they're subhuman species. But the commonality across the board is that they are disempowered. The result of disempowerment is anger and rage, and they're taking out the rage on people. But if we look at one specific subset, which is the biggest, we hear terms all the time, like socially isolated, introverted. The Aurora killer was described as incredibly uncommunicative. The person who shot up Virginia Tech had a massive case of selective mutism along with his mental illness. Selective mutism is an example of social anxiety. It is a speaking phobia. It's an example of a manifestation of social anxiety that basically renders the medical profession and the mental health professions helpless. What I try to do when I do shows like this is to say, how can we take a look at prevention? Because society's response methodology is impeccable. The first responders are at the scene right away. The attack methodology is analyzed very carefully. But where's the prevention? And what happens is, when you take, if you want prevention, you have to take a look at the number one characteristics, which are social avoidance. Where does that occur first in life? When children are young and you see patterns of social avoidance and social anxiety and this term selective mutism, which I'd like to address a little more. But what happens is the primary response on the part of professionals is leave little Johnny alone. He's shy. He'll grow out of the problem. Whereas in reality, what happens is the anxiety becomes more a part of the personality and the lifestyle, and it gets worse over time. We're talking about the third most prevalent mental health problem in the world behind depression and substance abuse, which are the two most comorbid problems associated with social anxiety. And quite frankly, at the risk of being too controversial, the mental health profession doesn't know what they're doing. All the time, you hear this cliche. There is such an overused cliche, which is, let's do CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. Okay, you know, listen, cognition is obviously important. Behavior speaks for itself. But if you don't get to the root of the problem, which is the emotionality and the anger and how that's related to physiology, you're going to go nowhere. I have a number of patients who are listening to this program this morning because they're sports fans, and I told them I'm going to be on. Mm-hmm. And these, they all fit a similar profile, the patients that I told to listen. They're in their between their mid-30s and their late 40s, and they all suffer from public speaking anxiety. Now, here's a trick question. What do these people have in common with these mass shooters? You know, I'm not trying to be crazy here, but there is a commonality. They are disempowered. They're angry at very deep levels. Now, you look at these individuals that I'm talking about. They're attractive. They're intelligent. They make good to huge salaries. But it's basically, I'm the only person, maybe their wife, and usually that doesn't happen, that knows they suffer from this incredible obsessive worry that dominates them. Picture this, and you know, there's many wonderful interviews at socialanxiety.com. One guy in particular I'm thinking about, senior executive of a billion-dollar company, was on a military SWAT team, played semi-pro football, had a number of what he referred to as breakdowns in public speaking scenarios. And what happens is they're in a group situation, they're giving a presentation, and they're taken out of their script, their obsessive script, obsessive is a key word here, and they have a panic reaction. So what happens is they learn how to avoid the situations. There's a lot of self-loathing. The commonality that these people have with the shooters is that they're disempowered and they're angry, because every time that a person has to avoid the situation that they want to be in or should be in, it's an investment in anger and rage at a very deep level.
To go back to the very beginning of that answer, when you talked about the mental health profession, basically, if I can paraphrase here, not having a real handle on how it is to approach this. Why is that?
That's an excellent question. Social anxiety is the quintessential disease of resistance. People do not want to expose themselves. People very often think that they have a character disorder versus anxiety. Be amazed as to how powerful some simple education can be about anxiety problems, especially social and performance anxiety. So they don't want to expose themselves. It's resistance. When you take a look at the early patterns of social avoidance, and selective mutism is a key one to look at, the basic response of parents is they have their own anxieties, and they have their differences in terms of parenting technique and philosophy. So 90% of the time, 99% of the time, they don't take action. So the mental health profession has not had really the opportunity to develop the appropriate methodology. That's why we're so used to this. I refer to it because it really drives me crazy, the reference to CBT. You know, you've got to do more than cognition and behavior. So one of the things that characterizes this is, let's talk about selective mutism for a moment. This is a condition where children who eventually turn into adolescents and adults do not speak because of anxiety. Public speaking anxiety used to be the number one phobia in the world. Now it's basically conversation anxiety, or just general speaking in public. So what happens is these kids are basically normal at home. This is the typical profile. But they don't talk in school, and then the teacher says, your kid's got this problem. The parents say, well, I don't understand what you're talking about. He's normal at home. But what happens in school and at home is when the child does not talk, the well-intentioned parent and professional gets into talking for and thinking for the child, and what happens is that's called enabling the addiction to avoidance. Social anxiety is fear. When fear turns into avoidance, it's called a phobia. So whether it's selective mutism, talking in public, conversation anxiety, formal public speaking anxiety, school phobia, fear of being noticeably nervous. Here's another. This is absolutely mind-blowing. A 20-year-old in Washington State committed suicide in May because of his fear of blushing. Facial hyperhidrosis. There was some press that followed that. The family started a website to help with blushing. Mm-hmm. One, the so-called world's expert, an MD in Chile, who wrote a book on blushing, writes in the book that this is an involuntary problem, blushing, and the answer to it is an invasive procedure called a sympathectomy. Let's cut nerves. Okay, I could bring 50 individuals to this interview. Oh, and they're at the website, socialanxiety.com interviews, who talk about how they resolve blushing through the work that we do with no medication. So this is an example of how misunderstood social anxiety and its different manifestations are.
When we talk about how prevalent this is in our society, numbers-wise, what are we talking about?
Well, Social anxiety basically impacts 1 out of 8. The most common example is fear of public speaking, and now we have, oh, by the way, texting has replaced talking as the most common form of communication. That in itself is mind-blowing, because what that has done is it has collectively inhibited society's neural, N-E-U-R-A-L, brain pathways required for verbal conversation. You'd be amazed as to how many people are debilitated when it comes to putting their thoughts into words.
No, I wouldn't. I teach in a college classroom.
There you go. So it's easy to text. And how many people will just never pick up the telephone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so fear of public speaking, conversation anxiety, fear of being noticeably nervous, selective mutism, school phobia, which in addition to an anxiety problem is a breakdown in parenting. This is another example of why the mental health profession is basically helpless with this. When I wrote my first book, Beyond Shyness, in 1992, published by Simon & Schuster, the publisher said, "You're writing a book on shyness. Why are you writing about parents?" Very simply, at that point, if I didn't work with parents, I wouldn't have had a practice. While there are many manifestations of social anxiety, and this is very important to understand, and the answer to your questions is millions and millions. It's the third most prevalent mental health problem. But while there are so many different examples of social anxiety, there are two basic types of people who have the problem. One are those with initiative. That doesn't mean ability. That means the motivation to start up, like my patients who are listening to this broadcast who have public speaking and performance anxiety. Okay, no children have initiative. Most adolescents do not have initiative. And there are plenty of 26-year-olds who are hanging out in their room playing computer games 50, 60, 70 hours a week at the expense of any socialization. And I can assure you, these people don't have initiative. So a mother of a 26-year-old calls me and says, "I'd like you to see my son. He's 26 years old." I say, "Sure, I need to see you first." The mother responds, "Why do you want to see me? He's 26 years old." My response, "Why are you making the phone call?"
Exactly.
So getting back to your question about why the mental health profession is so inept with treating this problem, they do not understand the avoidance dependence phenomenon.
We're talking with Jonathan Berendt on our program On the Fan. He is by profession a psychotherapist. He's been a guest on this program previously. We've always had very lively discussions. He is also the author of the book that I mentioned earlier in our discussion. It's entitled Beyond Shyness, How to Conquer Social Anxieties, the book published by Simon & Schuster. There is a website that has a lot of information, including a lot of the things that we're talking about thus far in our discussion, at socialanxiety.com. The whole idea of getting one to seek assistance, seek help, and move past the idea of denying that there is some sort of an issue that they are facing. How big an issue is that for some people to deal with?
It's a tremendous issue. People do not understand anxiety. They think they have a character disorder. Social and performance anxiety is based on the toxic emotions of embarrassment, shame, humiliation, fear of rejection. Many who suffer, especially as I mentioned, my patients who are listening to this program who suffer from the performance anxiety of public speaking are perfectionists. The last thing that a perfectionist is going to do is to admit that they're anything less than perfect. A young man named Andrew Kukis, parents started the Andrew Kukis Foundation. There's a link at the website, socialanxiety.com. Straight-A student, Columbia, Princeton, committed suicide because of social anxiety and the depression that was part of that. So the parents started this foundation. And we created a training program for mental health professionals where they can get continuing ed credits. Again, you can link at the website. Now, there's a great interview there with Kirk Reeder, who used to pitch for the San Francisco Giants.
Mm-hmm.
He won the most games as a left-hander for the Giants. And I work with he and his wife. His daughter had selective mutism, which I mentioned previously is an example of social anxiety. And I was joking around with him one day, and I said, "Kirk, you ever have a bad game?" And he says, I'm pitching against the Colorado Rockies. First inning, I'm losing 6-0, no outs. How do you deal with it? He responds, well, I have to pitch every fifth day. So what I think about is, what do I have to do to be better the next time out? Now, that is the perfect winning psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to ask yourself, what gets in the way of people thinking like that or believing that? And here's the answer. Number one, it's challenged self-esteem. And number two, it's the internal critical script that runs amok. Like, for example, the people who have performance anxiety and public speaking anxiety, their internal critical script goes something like, oh, people are going to see who I really am. They might see I'm a fraud. They're going to see I'm not worthy. And the more that there is physical symptomatology, like blushing, like stuttering, like being noticeably nervous in any form, this becomes debilitating, and it activates these very, very toxic emotions of embarrassment and shame. So a lot of people will struggle through it. Many people will avoid, and then this brings us to the next major issue here, which is the use of pharmaceuticals and substances for social anxiety. By far and away, alcohol is the drug of choice. One of the interviews at the website, socialanxiety.com, and this is very common, a salesman from Texas. Now, Texas is big football state, and this person talks about his power drinking growing up, weekends, football, 18 beers later, whatever. You know, I have a lot of patients who say they go for a couple of beers, but a couple is 10. Anyway, he got busted with a DWI and had to suffer with an ankle bracelet and a lot of humiliating situations. But the bottom line is that later on in treatment, he said that his use of alcohol was no less than 50% of the cause of his anxiety. And what I've discovered is that when I'm the first one who likes a good bottle of wine. You know, I'm not a prude. But alcohol is a big investment in defensive positioning. And if you're going to beat an anxiety disorder, you've got to go on offense. The analogy that I use, it's like football. When a person has an anxiety problem, they're playing defensive secondary. And the thinking goes something like, when are they going to throw the ball my way? That equates to, gee, will my adrenaline be an issue? Because adrenaline is the basis of the problem. So what I try to do in treatment is we get them out of defense, and they become the quarterback, and I'm the quarterback coach. So the quarterback may throw an interception, but he takes responsibility for creating motion. And by the way, I'm speaking to you with a great deal of humility today, being a Patriots and a Red Sox fan. I just want you to know that.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but because I knew that you've mentioned that before in our discussions. The idea of challenged self-esteem that you referred to earlier, how then in the treatment approach can you address that?
Well, the core issue with social anxiety is to differentiate between personhood and performance. Look, I like doing these radio shows. I have fun. It's been a learning experience. I've made mistakes, you know, when I started doing these in 1985 or wherever. The key is that if anybody's going to be good in anything, they have to invest in the learning curve, and they have to differentiate between personhood and performance. The person who keeps going, like in that Kirk Reeder story, you know, listen, he wins 130 games, he loses 100, but he still won the most games as a left-hander. Okay, it's that going forward. It is so amazing how people get debilitated and paralyzed because they put their self-esteem on the line. Sometimes the problem is so profound. Now, what happens also is that it's very hard for people to own this issue and to take responsibility for it and to even understand it. So a lot of times social anxiety is positioned as a medical disorder. It's not. It's an emotional psychological problem that very often has physiological ramifications. But this brings us to the issue of medication.
Mm-hmm.
Medication can be wonderful when used appropriately, but all too often people think that this is a medical problem, it's totally biological, so let's take medicine and that's going to be the cure. What I have learned 10,000 patients later since 1978 is the right way to use medicine is when the obsessive worry or the anxiety or the depression is overwhelming. You take the medicine, the purpose of which is to create a sense of ease so that the person can do the underlying work. Most people do not want to do that. The key in helping a person with social anxiety and performance anxiety get better, and this is what the big challenge is you have to teach them how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. One component of that is to understand the physiology of performance. Now, every time, it's a very interesting phenomenon. Every time before I do a TV or a radio show, my hands get cold. That's called vasoconstriction. That is an example of the physiology of performance. To me, it means ready, set, go. That same response to another person when they do not understand it can be the beginning of a panic attack. So what I try to teach in the books and in treatment is to make friends with your adrenaline, but that's a very paradoxical or opposite approach.
Hmm. When you're talking, and by the way, I should mention, in fact, we're talking with Jonathan Berendt on our program on The Fan. Jonathan is a psychotherapist. He's the author of Beyond Shyness, How to Conquer Social Anxiety. It's published by Simon & Schuster. There's a website at socialanxiety.com. There's a lot of information there along the lines of the things that we are talking about in our discussion. When we talk about the amount of information, education, if I can phrase it that way, about social anxiety, is that realistically, in 2012, a topic that's being addressed, let's start first, in medical schools?
That's a good question. I don't believe so. I don't believe that social anxiety is being addressed. When I was watching one of the major morning TV shows the other day, and this really characterizes things, and they had a clip with this person who wrote a book about his own anxiety. It was a pretty decent clip with your typical reference to CBT, and then they bring on this boring psychiatrist who basically says that the long-term resolution to anxiety disorders in general is pharmaceuticals. Okay, that's disempowering. That's where the medical profession is at. So it's not taught in medical school. Everything in medical school is presented. It's the medical model. You take medicine. You have an operation, going back to the blushing thing, and sympathectomies, cutting nerves. Now, this works for some people, obviously, but you think about how desperate you have to be to go under the knife and to have your nerves cut because of hyperhidrosis, or which is sweating, or blushing. So they're not taught it. And then we go to the mental health profession, which is dominated by this cliche of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is supposed to be the answer for everything. It's not. You've got to get to the root of the problem, which is the emotionality. My book, which came out 2 years ago, my latest book, Work Makes Me Nervous, by Wiley. This is about performance anxiety at work, specifically. And my co-writer comes out of the closet, her name is Amy, with what's called an avoidant personality disorder. All too often we use the word procrastination, but when you have chronic procrastination, it's really avoidance. What's the cause of avoidance? Anxiety. So you have very intelligent people who don't return that phone call, don't make that sales call, don't get in front of the group, avoid responsibilities because of this anxiety, okay? On an emotional level, it becomes an investment in this anger and rage, not necessarily at a conscious level, which drives the problem, and it sucks the life out of productivity and performance.
And when we think about what that potentially can cost, and I hate to phrase it that way, but for some people that's the way that actually smacks this home for them, what that can cost not only in the workplace but in people's lives. Those have got to be some pretty big numbers.
Oh, absolutely. Would you want to hire someone who doesn't pick up the phone or doesn't answer calls or doesn't make the calls or doesn't do the sales calls? Absolutely. You know, when I train my staff, I say, listen, you know, if there's a problem, I want to know about it right away. Don't hide it, because it gets worse over time.
Mm. We're in discussion with Jonathan Berent on our program. Lively discussion that we are having with him this Sunday morning. Jonathan is a psychotherapist. He is the author of several books that I've mentioned in the course of our discussion. Beyond Shyness, How to Conquer Social Anxieties, published by Simon & Schuster, his latest book, Work Makes Me Nervous. And he has a website at socialanxiety.com. There's a lot of information contained there along the lines of the things that we've been talking about thus far in our discussion. What I mentioned before our sports updates and messages is the fact that I wanted to try to focus on talking with some of the people listening to our program this morning, get some of your thoughts, comments, questions along the lines of what we have mentioned thus far. And Jonathan, as I expected, our phone lines are absolutely jammed this morning. So let's start with folks on the phone. 877-337-6666 is our number at the Fan. We first go to, we'll head to Larry in Keyport. And actually, can you bring him up in there for me? Larry in Keyport, who's been holding for some time.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Larry, good morning. Welcome to the Fan.
Yes, good morning. A question for the good doctor. I'm actually an excellent speaker. I've conducted numerous seminars. I've given speeches at weddings, retirements, etc. However, when speaking, I often, many, many times, add an acerbic cutting remark, and I do it intentionally to try and make myself sound like more intelligent and more powerful than those I'm speaking to. I feel I'm a confident person, yet I often criticize myself and shortchange myself on my abilities. And your talk this morning is absolutely excellent, because it kind of hits a raw nerve. Would that be considered a social anxiety? I mean, if anything, people think I'm it's obnoxious on occasion. And I don't think I am. I'm a funny guy. I write poetry. I really am. I'm a lot of good things. But the truth is, when I'm by myself and I'm reflecting on my life and other things, not to be too profound, I doubt myself, and people notice, and they say, what the hell's happened to
me? All right, let me try to answer.
And I'll stop here.
That's a little complicated. Thank you for sharing. Okay, let me respond this way. When I work with people, people say, what technique do you use? Well, there's technique and there's core work. Okay, technique alone does not resolve social anxiety, but one of the strategies that I use is to teach a person about their mind states. There are five mind states. Each one has specific energy. When I'm doing this show, I'm in what's called my natural child mind state. That's creative, spontaneity, having fun, exploration, discovery. I'm letting my personality come out. Hopefully it's effective. That's what I try to do when I'm in a public speaking scenario. Given the fact that you are good at what you do already, I would advise you to take this suggestion in and to implement it. Be more yourself. Let your true personality come out. Your true personality is not to cut yourself down. That's an example of your excessive internal critical script. That's another mind state running a little too amok. So the more that you can be yourself and embrace your true personality, I'm sure your performance will only get better.
Doctor, I want to thank you so much. Very, very interesting talk, and thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Thank you for your call this morning and your patience on the phone there, Larry. Let's go next to Gordy on Long Island. Gordy, good morning. Welcome to the Fan. Thanks for holding on so long.
Thank you for having me, Doctor. I'm a post-traumatic stress from the Korean War. I was in 9/11, and two of my buddies got killed in a Legionnaire's disease. My daughter's a doctor at Juro College, and I'm trying to get her to teach medical students to talk to people who have these ailments. Let them talk about it. And she says, Dad, I can't get it through the board. They don't want to be bothered. They want the kids to take drugs. The drug companies are paying all these doctors and hospitals to kill us.
Thank you for thank you for sharing. And what I would suggest to your daughter, who is a medical professional, is you go to the website socialanxiety.com. On the first page, in the upper right, is a link to this training video, Social Anxiety: The Untold Story. Professionals, the mental health disciplines across the board can get 12 continuing education credits. It's very related to what physicians do also. It is a training program that has so much essential information and probably one-of-a-kind interviews in the world with real patients who have gone through the process and who have healed.
Gordy, thank you for your call this morning. Let's go next to Andrea in New Jersey, who's been holding for some time. Andrea, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Thank you. Welcome to me. I have a question. I'm a social worker, and I think part of the reason I'm a social worker is years ago I didn't have the confidence to pursue a PhD. And although, you know, on paper maybe I'm doing okay professionally, I've avoided learning how to use the computer, and my writing skills, I think, are inhibiting me from taking another, by lack thereof, a computer and writing skills, are inhibiting me from taking the other step, maybe towards being a manager or administrator. And then I wind up comparing myself to other people in other fields and feel like a complete idiot because I don't know how to do certain things, despite the fact that, you know, I'm not given feedback professionally that I'm an idiot. I think people respect me, but it's like a vicious cycle. And then, you know, wind up smoking pot or doing self-destructive things to decrease my anxiety and depression, which obviously isn't helping me in the long run. So I just guess I wanted to ask, where do you get started?
Where you get started, I really, go to socialanxiety.com. There is a ton of information there, a ton. If you want the best self-help tool in the world, it is, and this was just created, it finished about 10 months ago, and it was released about 4 months ago. It's called Social Anxiety, The Untold Story. Mm-hmm. It is a DVD. It's about 11 hours. It's a documentary. It's also a training film. It breaks down the technique and the core work, and integrated into this program are, I'm not kidding you, these are one-of-a-kind interviews with people who have solved the problem, whether it's the performance anxiety, public speaking, people who've resolved the blushing problem, the hyperhidrosis without medicine. There are a number of skilled professionals and experienced professionals who also are participating in this. That is where I would start. If you want one thing, that's where I would go. Social Anxiety, The Untold Story at socialanxiety.com.
Thank you. Do I have time for just a quick sports-related connection?
Go ahead. It's got to be quick.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this has anything to do with Jason Bay's ineffectiveness?
Jason Bay, I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm glad we traded him. And I'm really upset that they traded Alex Gonzalez.
I can talk. I'm a therapist. So feel free to share your feelings.
You have no idea what I have to go through with Giants fans being a Patriots fan. I think that Tom Brady is a much better quarterback than Eli Manning, but boy, oh boy, I have to suck it up.
I think he's better looking. That's
You know, I really have to suck it up. What can I say?
Well, I'm a Mets fan. Imagine how I feel.
And I was at the sixth game of the 86 World Series.
Oh, my gosh. That's post-traumatic stress.
There you go.
Andrea, thank you very much for your call this morning, too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty. 877-337-6666, our number here at The Fan. Let's see. Next, we go to Karen on Long Island. Karen, thanks for holding on. Welcome to The Fan.
Oh, thank you. This is very exciting for me because this is first time in a long time, you know, for me as a fan listener. But anyway, I can completely identify with so much of what you're saying, especially with respect to this anxiety as it has affected my profession. I'm a self-employed and professional, and I basically, you know, crashed my business into a wall over the past 2 years because of some of these behaviors that you're talking about. So in light of that, and in light of the fact that I, you know, now, if I don't do something about this, I'm going to be facing significant financial issues for myself and my family. So I've started something called dialectical behavioral therapy, and I just wanted to get the doctor's thoughts on that protocol.
Okay, here's my thoughts.
Yeah.
There are four domains of treatment,
right.
I mean, that need to be in effective treatment. All the, you know, look, there's technique and there's core work.
Right.
Core work is you've got to get to the emotionality involved, embarrassment, shame, humiliation, and this is what doesn't make sense to a lot of people, is the anger at a very deep level, which is the core issue. So the domains of treatment are cognition, thinking, obviously, not priority order here, but cognition, thinking, everything starts with a thought. A lot of thoughts are not necessarily conscious. Behavior speaks for itself. And emotion and how the emotion relates to physiology. So it's thinking, behavior, emotion, physiology. Any treatment that does not incorporate, well, let me phrase it positively. In order to be productive with treating social and performance anxiety, you have to work on all of those domains, period, exclamation point.
So what are your thoughts?
I don't know about dialectical whatever behavior stuff that much. I really don't.
So, well, the interesting thing is, I'll just fill you in briefly, is the how you started this conversation about your mind states, that's very much in line with the beginning of the treatment that I'm learning about, is the recognition that there are these different mind states, a mind state of wisdom, a mind state of emotion, and a mind state of logic, that, you know, you get into these different mind states, and they're not necessarily...
Okay, let me simplify this. In the book, Works Makes Me Nervous, excuse me, I have a little anxiety here, and Social Anxiety, The Untold Story, there is a before and after ego graph that makes this very concrete, scientific, and observable. You see the mind states in the present tense graphed out where they're at with social anxiety before, and then you see the after, and then there is the process of what do you have to do to restructure the mind states, all of which have specific energy.
Right. And is that book, that's one book you're talking about?
Work Makes Me Nervous. That's about performance anxiety at work, uh-huh. And this includes what I just said about the ego graph.
Right.
But as I said before, Social Anxiety, The Untold Story, the documentary and training film, which is also for continuing ed credits, has this in a lot of detail. It's 11 hours documented on film with real people. It's one of a kind.
Karen, we got to go. Thank you for your
Great.
Call this morning. Thanks to everybody who tried to get through in our discussion with Jonathan Berendt. We've got to move along here as we're about to wrap up our program. Jonathan is a psychotherapist. He's an author. His books, as he has mentioned, his latest book, Work Makes Me Nervous, Overcome Anxiety and Build the Confidence to Succeed. His previous book, Beyond Shyness, How to Conquer Social Anxieties. He has created the website Social Anxiety, that's all this one word, .com. As always, lively discussion. I think we've got an awful lot of people thinking as well. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Bob.